B-Pod Studios.
Hi, this is Kevin Owens, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Great name, Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast. So what does that mean? You guys aren't allowed to discuss if anything happens outside the ropes? What if somebody gets clotheslined over the top rope? Do you guys cover the Royal Rumble? These are questions I need answered. Anyway, you're listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with two geniuses who came up with this name.
Mike Riley, I want to lead off with a note from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer newsletter. Uncle Dave, of course, chiming in on SummerSlam. Dave Meltzer writes, quote, Vince McMahon had hoped to have SummerSlam as the first major arena show and was willing to move it to September if necessary. As we've seen just within the last few weeks, schedule changes are plentiful for a number of reasons, whether it's pandemic changes or other things that may not end up happening. Clearly, the decision at this point is live events with crowds in September aren't that likely. So those are the current plans. And he mapped out the taping schedule and all this stuff. And the Twitter account WrestleVotes, who has been on top of all this stuff, tweeted this, quote, being told with SummerSlam off the table, WWE is now aiming for the end of September as a restart for live audience to be determined. So for everybody who's listening in Boston or has travel plans to come to Boston, it just means that it's another step closer to WWE officially canceling SummerSlam in Boston. And whether it's off the table totally for 2020 or if it's going to be pushed back, we don't know. But if you're planning to come to Boston for SummerSlam, probably not a great idea. My assumption is that they're going to do like they did with WrestleMania in Tampa, and that's refund everything and figure out what to do going forward. Similar to AEW, who just rescheduled their Dynamite show for Boston University. It was August 5th. It is now April 21st, 2021. Mike Riley, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, and the other thing too, I was reading up on this with next week's Extreme Rules. It was supposed to be in San Jose, but the WWE did promise them a pay-per-view to return to San Jose in the year 2021. So yeah, it's probably Boston's going to get it again back in 2021 at some point, SummerSlam or a different pay-per-view, but hopefully it will be SummerSlam. They'll hold on to that there. It's too bad. What can you do? WrestleVotes, like you said, they have been on top of that. That's been the most accurate source I can see there for any eligible, sort of tweets and so forth. And they have that information accurate because, you know, Marty Walsh, they're tapped into something with that, that it's only a matter of time before this is all said and done. And the WWE is to say that this is not going to happen in Boston. But again, we've seen them hold out to the last minute like they did with WrestleMania this year. So probably not going to get an announcement on it. I'm going to say at this point, August 1st, right? Because SummerSlam was supposed to be August 22nd. So that's a good 3-week period for them. So yeah, refund will definitely happen. It's just the way of the world right now. It's a shame. And I think hopefully we get SummerSlam here in Boston in 2021.
And kind of worth mentioning is that if you're expecting an immediate refund,
yeah,
you're going to be waiting a little bit. And that's because Ticketmaster has no business. A lot of their employees aren't working because they have to refund all this money. And so, I mean, and Ticketmaster is probably like holding off trying to slowly refund people's money because they don't want to go out of business.
Right.
And I have ticket scalper friends. Ticket scalper is a mean term, but I have friends who work in the secondary ticket market. That's a nice politically correct way of putting it. who some of them have just gone out of business because they don't see anything happening for the next till January, maybe.
Yeah, it's gonna take a while.
So don't be angry at Ticketmaster. There's a lot of things to be angry at Ticketmaster for. Mm-hmm. The fact that they can't pay anybody is kind of, you know, that's part of the 40 million people who are out of work.
Right.
But we don't expect SummerSlam. We haven't felt strongly about SummerSlam for a while. The mayor doesn't want anybody packing into buildings. And there's a story that's going to come out tomorrow from John Hopkins that they expect more states to see surges in COVID-19 cases and things like that.
Yep.
They're projecting the worst, and Massachusetts is entering phase three of reopening.
Yeah, phase three.
To which I would say, based on what's going on across the rest of the country, I would pause that. I would keep us in phase two. And let's see how that goes. And I know that that's not great, but we have to balance out, like, what can we do versus what can't we do? And
And
safety of people seems to be most important right now.
Yeah. And like you said, we're in phase three, but really look at it with the phase two. And the governor here, he's been pretty conservative of reopening Massachusetts and so forth. I'm not trying to get on a political spectrum here by any means necessary, but they have also said that we're not going to be in phase four, where everything is pretty much back to normal until we get a vaccine. So we don't have a crystal ball when that is going to happen, but I'm with you. We're going very slow here, the approach, and the way that looks for SummerSlam to happen here in Massachusetts. I mean, it could be a good thing for the country to have it be the first of a wrestling event or any live indoor event, because we're ahead of the game on some of the other states. But to your point there with the John Hopkins article, with the surges coming back, we may get it back here again next month. We just don't know. So I think the safe bet, though, this is done for 2020, and we'll have SummerSlam in Boston in 2021.
And realistically, like, we might not have crowds at wrestling shows until the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it's
just that's just kind of the way that it's trending.
Yep.
Who knows? I hope I'm wrong, because I've been wrong every single step of the way, because I'm like, oh, we'll be through this Easter, no problem. Not great on that one.
It was a nice wish.
It was a nice wish. It was optimistic.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the lead story. There's not a lot of discussion debate point on it. But the lead story is relating to SummerSlam. And once we get an official cancellation, we'll mention it. But that's kind of the update. We're waiting for the official word that SummerSlam isn't happening. Mm-hmm. So when we get that, we'll further that and we'll announce it officially. But I think, Mike, the lead actual in-ring story is Keith Lee. Keith Lee beat Adam Cole this week on NXT. He became NXT double champion.
Yep.
Which is a thing now, because New Japan has a double champion. So NXT must think that they need a double champion. And depending on what happens with Moxley and Cage, there might be another double champion. So, and Sasha and Bayley have two titles. But specifically to Keith Lee, he is now the NXT champion, and he is the NXT North American champion. I have enjoyed the build of Keith Lee since War Games and Survivor Series in November. I tend to think that Velveteen Dream was going to beat Adam Cole had there been a takeover in Tampa. But between Tampa being canceled and Velveteen Dream's issues with understanding social media and life etiquette of who to and who not to talk to in certain ways, Velveteen Dream wasn't getting this title. And we may not see Velveteen Dream for a long time, because creative won't have anything for him while they figure out what's going on with him and his social media tendencies. So the combination of Keith Lee being built up and being a person of seemingly great character, and it being an important show for NXT, they branded it the Dusty Rhodes Great American Bash, because it was Dusty's idea. Lee made a lot of sense here. And I also know that they had a fabulous match, because Adam Cole doesn't have bad matches and Keith Lee's a fabulous performer.
Right.
I know there was and is speculation of what's next for Adam Cole. I'm not sure if he's switching brands, but I do believe that Cole is staying within the WWE family.
Yep.
They'll probably do a rematch, and then it's a matter of who's Keith Lee's next challenger. And they're kind of off to the races with Keith Lee. But overall, fabulous match the other night with those two. Keith Lee's just done everything well. The interaction with Roman Reigns had a very supportive tweet the other day for Keith Lee. So Keith Lee, let's see how he does as the man carrying the ball for the NXT brand.
Yeah, and what a year for Keith Lee, too. I mean, as you say, he's the first ever NXT champion and North American champion at the same time right there. Just a guy, you know, the size of him there, it's a Vince McMahon kind of guy, and totally could see him making that move to Raw or SmackDown down the line. I just hope they don't force it on him. But for Adam Cole here, you know, I'll talk about him in just a minute, but Keith Lee, the torch carrier here at this point during a pandemic, similar to what they're doing with Drew McIntyre and, you know, even Braun Strowman for that matter, just big guys right there with championships and not much to lose either. Really not much to lose, but I don't know. I just think if it doesn't go well for Keith Lee, obviously you need that crowd reaction. He's not going to have that regular crowd reaction he would get. Yeah, there are some, you know, we know the fans that are inserted there, the extras and so forth. But it's a good scenario for him here, even if he doesn't have the crowd with him. So good testing ground, see where it goes, and hopefully he'll have that shot on Raw or SmackDown down the line. Now, my question for Adam Cole here, and that match too was a really good match too, by the way, against Adam Cole, because those two went at it the whole way. Great storytelling at the end. But my question here for Adam Cole, yes, Raw or SmackDown looks like that's going to be the case, or do they stay in NXT? What is next for the Undisputed Era? Adam Cole, there's so much potential here with him. Where do you put him? You know, that's a lot to look at right here. And you even alluded to that Triple H is such a huge fan of Adam Cole. Shawn Michaels loves Adam Cole. You get those two guys in Vince McMahon's ear, he's going to get that push right away.
So what they have to do with Adam Cole, it's very important because Vince doesn't love his size.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for the maximum impact of Adam Cole, you have to put him in the main event picture. So whether that's but the problem is that with the way that WWE's rosters are structured right now, Drew McIntyre is the WWE champion of Raw.
Yep.
He's oversized, 6'8", three bills. Not a great fit there. Braun Strowman is 6'8", over three bills. Not a great fit there. So you're going to have the Undisputed Era and Adam Cole specifically. If they're going to go to Raw or SmackDown, they're going to start in either the Intercontinental Championship feud or the U.S. Championship feud. Because those are, even though Apollo Crews is the U.S. champion, like, he's a better fit on the poster, so to speak. Their sizes are better off. Adam Cole versus AJ Styles, yes, in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's where they have to go with Adam Cole, unless they make a transition back to AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston as the WWE or Universal Champion. But that's kind of where we're at with Adam Cole. If Adam Cole's not in your main event, that's kind of a waste of the Undisputed Era, I think.
Yeah.
But you also have to, educate the audience to who, the different audience to who they are, as opposed to just, here's Adam Cole versus Daniel Bryan in the main event of SmackDown because the roster is being held hostage in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, exactly.
But Adam Cole's a main event player based on everything except his size.
Right.
And that's the issue.
Right, right. I mean, what is he, about 6 feet, right about there? But yeah, his physique is so small. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the same physique as CM Punk in a way, you know, and maybe he'll have that, the push right there as a champion. So yes, he does need to be right there where he is in that championship picture as soon as possible. You can't throw this away because otherwise you built up a character for so long. What, 400 days as NXT champion, right? 403 days? So
it's in the ballpark. I don't know the exact number, but it's in the ballpark.
Yeah, so, I mean, you got to keep that going there. Similar to what I thought would should have been with Rhea Ripley, in a championship role right there. So hopefully they don't screw this up. But when you have the backing of Triple H and Shawn Michaels, for that matter, I think the future is bright for Adam Cole here on out. And again, very happy for Keith Lee being the NXT champion, because it's a great scenario for him. And to be the torch carrier right there, only bigger and better things are going to happen for him. And it looks like all indications after that match there, it's going to be Killer Cross, I think, because he was right. And, you know, they stared him down after the victory against Adam Cole. I think that's a big push right there for Killer Cross, for that matter. So going to be interesting to see how those two work together as well.
So Cole's official days of recognition are 403.
Mm-hmm.
His actual days is 396 because they taped matches and so on and so on and so on.
Uh-huh. There you go.
So there's that. See, I think Killer Cross, I'm calling him Killer Cross, whatever. That's how I know him.
Yep.
I feel like he is going to be more in that Lars Sullivan category where he's going to be in important matches, but he's not going to win them.
Okay.
And then he's going to bump up to the main roster and do something a little bit more impactful,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's win a championship or be this destructive force. But nobody liked Lars Sullivan, so it didn't really kind of go anywhere. That's kind of how I feel, is that they're going to bring Scarlett and Cross up, and they're going to have more to do because you can do more with them.
Right.
They're better promos. They have better presentation than Lars Sullivan did. Supposed to Lars Sullivan was this, we don't know what to do. And saying we, the fans, we don't know what to do with them, but we don't like them.
Yeah.
We're not feeling it.
Never got over.
Nope.
No.
But Vince McMahon is like, wow, look at him.
That's that thing with the size. And I hope that, you know, for Keith Lee's sake here, that they can, you know, Vince is going to love him, but hopefully they don't screw that up with him as well, because that's a great talent right there.
So my next WWE notation that I want to point out is how good Asuka, Bayley, and Sasha Banks have been. They have been the most entertaining wrestlers on all brands for, call it, the last 6 weeks, maybe longer than that. But here's what's brought us to this spot. Their promos, their presentation, it's not their in-ring work. Asuka's been so entertaining the last 6 months or so. And now that Bayley and Sasha have been given promo time, they've also been given a purpose. And specifically with Bayley, it took Bayley about a year to find this transition into her role model character. And Sasha being given a spot as a villain with her has been just, it's the perfect match. And we're all clamoring, when are they going to turn? When are they going to turn? They don't need to turn. It doesn't feel like that they should turn. They should stretch this out a little bit. The last year of Bayley has gone from Money in the Bank cash in on May 19th, 2019. And yes, I do know the date specifically for a main reason. and that's a long time ago. That feels like forever ago.
Oh, yeah.
So that run leading to her losing to Charlotte at Hell in a Cell was very eh. Right? On paper, I think she had some big wins, but as far as TV making those wins feel important, I don't think they did a really good job of that. But then Bayley wins the title back from Charlotte on SmackDown 5 days after, I think it was. I think it was the SmackDown right after Hell in a Cell. And after she wins, she cuts the promo. And now we've got the start of, she's no longer the hugger. She's developing the role model character, because the hugger persona, the teeny bopper fan of all the wrestlers, only had so much of a shelf life. So now she's transitioning into being the evil side of that. But here's what I think is the most important point. It took 7 or 8 months for the character to develop, to be comfortable and to be interesting. And it's similar to, it took New Day a while to be accepted as a group.
Yep.
It took countless other wrestlers to get into their groove on a certain side of the ledger. And Bayley's been champion. If you take out the 5-day hiccup, she's over 400 days
yep.
as the SmackDown Women's Champion. And while the pre-Hell in a Cell run was meh, the last few weeks and months have been just tremendous. Just tremendous. And her and Sasha work so well together. And what's happened is they've been given a focal point and they're just excelling at it. So kudos to specifically Sasha and Bayley, but also to Asuka, because they, I think, have really been the MVPs of WWE for the last few weeks and months.
Yeah, and you know, they have a match this week on Raw with the you know, the tag team titles on the line there, the Kabuki Warriors. So three out of the four right there of the, you know, main cornerstones of the women's evolution right there. You know, I know you talk about, you know, Sasha and Bayley working so well together, but here's the thing, Jimmy. I just think that, you know, Sasha, it's been teased before that her and Bayley would have this breakup at some point. And it was 2 years ago where they had the therapy and, you know, they came back and became the first ever women's tag team champions. And again, the tease there and so forth. But if it's working so well, as you describe right here, which I agree with, yes, it is, I think you're also at a point for Sasha Banks where she very easily could become a face again. And when you have that capability of working, she has been a face before. We know that. She's been
drew a lot of money.
Exactly. And she can do it again. So if you have that capability to build a feud with Bayley where it could only be a matter of time where Bayley turns on Sasha, I think that's the best case scenario. Makes Sasha a baby face. She very easily could be the face of the women's division in the WWE, because Becky Lynch is out. Charlotte is taking some time off. You know,
Charlotte's going to be out a while.
Yeah, there you go. So
Charlotte's going to be out a while.
So this is the perfect scenario for Sasha Banks right here to make her a babyface. And what better way to feud with Bayley? Now, listen, would it be great to have it in front of a crowd? Absolutely. I think the dream scenario would have been to have it happen right here in Boston, Sasha's build hometown, for SummerSlam. That's not going to happen, but this would be a perfect case scenario for the WWE and for Sasha Banks. She can be the face of the women's division, and she knows Bayley so well. If it's working well here as a heel, it sure as heck can work well when she can be a face too.
So too soon for me,
okay,
for Banks to turn on Bayley. And I want that in front of a crowd. SummerSlam would have been good with the accelerated pace that WWE works at, but they've slowed things down a lot. So I don't want any major turns until we get to the point where we have fans who can live react to them.
Okay.
Not the NXT trainees who are there and they're told how to react.
Right.
But I want to see Banks and Bayley for a little bit longer as a villain tag team. And more specifically, I want Banks to beat Asuka at Extreme Rules.
That'd be great.
Because I want them to have all the belts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working all three brands. They're doing a great job. I want more of it. And I also want to get to the point where the Sasha Banks has multiple successful title defenses, because that was a thing where she would win a title and then lose it right back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. I'd like to see her with a little bit of a run across a singles championship.
Yep.
Would I want it in any other situations? I'd let Asuka run with it for a little bit, but I think right now, give Banks and Bayley all the gold. Give it all to them. You got nothing, because TV ratings are terrible right now.
Not good at all.
And there's some reasons for that. That may be beyond WWE's control. Maybe it is that the programming's just been terrible, with an exception here or there. Maybe it's because people are now just consuming it on digital platforms,
right,
and that doesn't go to TV ratings. There's a pandemic going on.
Right.
Maybe they just don't have that one big hit. They don't have Hogan or Savage or Warrior or
Austin,
Rock, Cena.
Yep.
They don't have that. And so that's part of the reason is that they don't have that hit song. But I want to see Bayley and Banks on their villain run for a little bit longer, and I want to see them gloat. That bit that they did with Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss on SmackDown.
Oh, fantastic.
Tremendous. And that's because you've got four excellent talkers in there.
Yep.
But that's what Bruce Pritchard is about, is he's more of a promo guy.
Yep.
And he's the head of creative of Raw and SmackDown. And depending on who you talk to, he might be the second most powerful man in WWE.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know if you saw Conrad's comments on Bruce Pritchard. He had an interview on WrestlingInc.com about Bruce. And it just, you know, not that I don't think we should not know this, but, you know, Bruce has made reference to Conrad that he's burnt out. He is very, very tired, exhausted right now. Two shows. You're right. Second most important guy in the WWE, depending who you talk to. I think, yeah, he's Vince's lieutenant right there. So it's going to be interesting to see. Maybe history will repeat itself if he gets burnt out. Maybe say, see you later, or they get furious with him and that's it again. But overall, he's made the transition there since after Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff to do that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all pans out, even without the crowd. So a lot thrown on Bruce's plate, and he's doing a pretty darn good job.
Yeah, all things considered, Bruce is doing the best job that he can right now. And I think he's doing a good job to work with what he has, because he'll spend, for example, and this is the example that Conrad Thompson used, is he'll spend the week writing TV with Vince, and Vince will approve it. And then they get to the TV and you get 30 wrestlers medically disqualified.
Right.
So now you've got 2 hours to rewrite everything.
Right.
Or an hour to rewrite everything, whatever the timing is.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's legitimately doing the best that he can under these terrible circumstances. So I give, and I've been critical, like, because the show's been, it's a variety show, right? And there's 3, 5, 7 plus a pay-per-view. There's a lot of WWE wrestling. There's too much WWE wrestling. There's too many stars.
Yep.
But the idea is that there's a variety show and there's something for everybody.
Right.
But now you have all these different variables that nobody can control.
Right.
And so you've got to kind of adjust on the fly, and maybe this isn't a match that you want to do tonight, but it's the only match that you can do. And that's Bruce. That's Bruce's job. That's Vince's job.
Yep.
So
you can only do so much.
Yeah. And unfortunately for them, the ratings are terrible unless you're over 50 years old.
Yeah. And that's pretty interesting you said that, because I looking at the NXT ratings this week, that's where they won the 50 and over category. And they actually, the third week in a row, they've won overall too, 759,000. I didn't see the whole Raw one, but you're right. The over 50 years old, that was the one that pushed them over. It's pretty, I was like, wow, for NXT, very interesting.
So that's generational viewing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the WWE brand, and people of that age, that's what they do, because that's what they do. That's what they know.
Yeah.
So, like, and this is something that people forget with the whole Monday Night Wars. People were watching Nitro for two reasons. One, it was Hogan as a bad guy, right? Hogan is a bad guy. We've never seen it before.
Right.
And then it's WCW had how many years of generational, at least one generation of heritage with Ric Flair and Sting?
Yep.
So you combine that together and people are going to watch. And TNT was available in more homes, and the ratings were a little inflated, because if you know, and I could do ratings talk forever.
Oh, yeah.
It'll put people to sleep. But in short form, I don't know that we actually had as many people watching wrestling as was promoted, because the way the rating system works is if you watch something or listen to something for 5 minutes, you get credit for 15 minutes.
Yep.
So you could have somebody who watches 7 minutes of one show and then click over and watch 7 minutes of the other show. And that's one person. That's one television that counts for both shows.
Yep.
just something to keep in mind.
Exactly. And that worked in their favor all the time. So, yeah, that's a very good point there. Never thought of it that way there with the ratings aspect. So that's something interesting to look at when you look at the numbers. Hey, there's a lot that goes into it.
And also now with the digital platforms and mm-hmm. things like that, and those numbers aren't accounted for.
Yep.
So like TV money is based off of potential ratings, but you know, what's the digital impact on there? And I don't know that because those numbers are all kept internal as opposed to Nielsen is a public company. You can find those out very quickly.
Exactly.
So hypothetical question for you.
Yeah.
Because this was posed to me by a friend in a text message.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Drew McIntyre potentially losing to Randy Orton at SummerSlam? And I know we're skipping past Extreme Rules, but this is a question that somebody asked me.
So I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, I think Drew McIntyre was dealt the tough hand with the championship. You know, how he look at the whole documentary on him there leading up to WrestleMania, the 24/7, I think, or whatever the heck it was, the 24 documentary on the WWE Network on Drew McIntyre and how he was excited to be in front of a crowd, hometown, Tampa Bay. And again, dealt the tough hand there with the pandemic. So he's been given the opportunity to run with the title. Unfortunately, in front of no crowd, I would not be opposed to seeing Randy Orton win against Drew McIntyre. And then you have Drew chase Randy Orton or another villain down the line and win in front of a crowd where he deserves to have that moment. Yes, the Royal Rumble was huge for him, what they did for him this year. But I have no issue with that Randy Orton winning against Drew McIntyre. I think that would be fine. I think Randy Orton is one of the most underappreciated champions of all time. And he's a great heel. And he's been a face too, but he's a better heel. And I think that would be perfectly fine if he were to beat Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam. Skipping over Extreme Rules, though, huh?
Yeah, and it's because they're going to do a mini movie.
Yep.
No, he's fighting Big Show at Extreme Rules.
Yeah,
McIntyre's fighting Dolph Ziggler, and
which we don't know in that match.
Nobody thinks that Dolph is going to win, which makes me raise an eyebrow and say, Bruce might. I don't think he will because I don't think Vince would approve it, but I could see Bruce pitching the idea and being like, nobody's calling Dolph to win.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we put the belt on Dolph and then we can switch it back?
And Pritchard loves Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, yeah, because he used to show up at the live events for Something to Wrestle.
Right.
And Dolph is much underappreciated as far as in-ring work. He never recovered from the cash in of winning the world title. And then, because they were never going to push him as a real Dolph right now, for better or for worse, is the guy who makes everybody else look better. And you're like, why is he in the main event picture? Why is he fighting for titles? It's because he makes everybody look good.
Right. Right. What do you think? Yeah, that's how he is. But I didn't mean to interrupt you, but what do you think of Randy Orton potentially winning against Drew McIntyre, though, SummerSlam?
Oh, I hate it.
Why?
I absolutely hate it.
Why?
Because you're rewarding Randy Orton, who, when he's motivated, is one of the best performers that company has.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's motivated, and now you're going to reward him.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Well,
and especially with McIntyre, who's come back from so much, I don't take the title off of McIntyre until we get some semblance of a crowd back. I don't take the title off of McIntyre until we get some semblance of like the next guy. Like Orton's 14th title. No, 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 No.
But it's,
and I don't even. I don't want to put the belt back on Orton.
Well, I get what you're saying, but the only reason I would not be opposed to it, like I said, is because of no crowd. And I think that'd be awesome for Drew to have that chase and win in front of a crowd, get that pop he deserves. He's not going to get that right now. And Randy Orton, 14th title, great, good for him. It's not 16, it's not 17, so who cares? 14, I have no issue with that. That's fine. And to be rewarded, I mean, listen, Jimmy, let's remember, he wasn't the greatest wrestling match of all time. Let's remember that.
Which was actually pretty good.
It actually was
the greatest of all time, but it was a pretty good match.
Well, it was a lot better than the WrestleMania 36 one with Edge. Yeah. Oh, good. They're still fighting from that. So if you're going to reward him for that, then go ahead. I have no issue with that. Let Drew chase again. Let him give that dream and tell another story like, hey, I wasn't able to do this in front of a crowd. Now I'm going to do it, and he wins when the time is right, when fans are allowed again.
I think Drew McIntyre has been good.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take the title off him right now. There's no reason to.
Okay.
He should beat Randy Orton. If you're going to take the title off of either him or Braun, it's Brock.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not wasting Brock with no fans.
Right. Save him.
And that's the only reason why I do that. I wouldn't like they're going to do a swamp match with Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt.
No title.
Non-title.
Yep.
So Bray's going to win that, which is going to bring the Fiend back for SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the Fiend to be the champion.
Yep.
Because then you go through the whole like, well, how do you get it off him?
Mm-hmm.
I still think that the guy who beats Strowman is Brock Lesnar, and you put Brock on SmackDown once we have people back.
Right.
But you're not bringing Brock out of Winnipeg for no fans.
Right.
You're just not. And you're not bringing back Goldberg, and you're not wasting your big chips.
Yep. Yep.
Because it's to me, it's not worth it. There's no value there to bringing those guys back.
Right.
So I would just keep the champions as is. You know, you make a small little move here or there, but keep the titles on McIntyre and Strowman, and you just move forward until you get to the point where it's like, okay, this character is really hot. Or you just like, I don't want Otis cashing in on either one of these guys. Because Otis is either going to lose or he's going to win.
Yeah.
And I don't want Otis to win right now.
No.
I still want Otis to hand the briefcase to Mandy Rose and Mandy Rose to cash in on whoever.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's so much of better of like Mandy Rose played Otis this whole time, got the case, got the title, and now hit the bricks, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that'd be good. I like that. Yeah. I you can save that for the whole year here, and hopefully less than a year now we'll have a crowd, and that would be such a better reaction for when and if the time Otis does do that, and Mandy Rose, if that scenario, or if he is to cash in and be successful with something. Just for now, you got to tease as much as you can. And for the Orton thing, you know, for him to win like that, that's fine. Now, just to touch real quick, I was just looking this up as you were talking about Brock Lesnar, save the big guys for that. He's been a champion 8 times. Now, he's not going to break Ric Flair's record, but you could start to talk about that a little, depending how much longer Brock Lesnar is going to go. He's 43 years old. You bring him back once every couple of months, holds the title. I that could be something built on his resume there to say, hey, he's a double digit champion. Use that disadvantage there. So that could be interesting storytelling as well.
Well, with Brock, there was talk before WrestleMania that was supposed to be in Tampa that Brock Lesnar's last match was going to be at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, I think he had like 30 dates per year. Maybe it's 40 dates. But Brock Lesnar, first ballot Hall of Famer. And I'm pretty sure if you added up all of his days as champion.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be in the Backlund territory.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Let's see here. Let's go to Google. To put in to perspective, Backlund was the champion for 6 years.
Oh,
right. So that's over 2,000 days.
Yep.
So 761 for Brock's WWE title reign.
Yep.
And the Universal Championship is going to be 686 days.
And he never, you know, like you said, he never really defended it, the title. Oh, wow. Actually, Jimmy, ironically enough, we're taping today. Today is Brock Lesnar's birthday. Today.
Happy birthday, Brock.
There you go. 43 years young today. So, yeah, it's just like he held the title, never defended it. That's the only thing going against him to be a double-digit champion. But you're right, holding it for such a long period of time, that's going to be in his record book right there to say longest reigning, longest tenured WWE or Universal Champion.
But Brock Lesnar is one of the most impressive combat sport athletes of all time.
Yep.
And because he works such a limited schedule, like it's held against him. And I get why it's held against him by the hardcores, but he's an attraction.
Yep.
And because he's a legitimate UFC champion, that's part of the appeal. That's part of the draw. But I don't think Brock Lesnar has been a real true draw to the casual fan in a long time, maybe since the match with Goldberg.
Right.
In Orlando.
Right.
Maybe it was really the Goldberg match at Survivor Series.
And they tried to build him up more after the Undertaker with the streak and, you know, those couple of matches that he had with the Taker too, to make it that draw there. And it wasn't really the biggest, but it still was an attraction for that matter. They did the best they could, but it wasn't a Hogan Warrior, wasn't a Hogan Macho Man, things along those lines. Austin, Rock, it was probably the best you were going to get, Cena, Rock, of that time, but it just never was up to that level, though.
So, yeah, WWE has a pay-per-view on Sunday. You know, we'll do the recap show after it. Hopefully it's done by 9:30.
Which has been great, by the way.
Oh, it's been awesome.
Oh, bring it.
Sleep is at a premium for me these days anyway, but very happy that these things are ending at 9:30 and I get the podcast posted by 11. And
it's beautiful.
See you later. So there's nothing really that, like, I think it'll be a good show. They'll do the cinematic stuff. Nothing really, like, I'd like to see Banks win, just so that they have all the belts. I think Bayley and Nikki Cross could be good. You know, Dolph and Drew will be good. They're going to do a cinematic thing for the Eye for an Eye match with Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins.
Yep.
Which we'll see. If it's good, good. If it's terrible, we'll criticize it. And that's kind of really it for that show. Because it looks like they're going to do AJ Styles and Matt Riddle for the Intercontinental Championship on SmackDown, which I find interesting, but I understand. And I kind of expect a Baron Corbin run-in to disrupt it, because it's a little too soon to put the IC title on Riddle, and it's a little too soon to beat Riddle. Unless Riddle's just, here's his TV time. Now we understand his social media activities. So he's gone.
Yep. Yep. And that would also be the second pay-per-view, too, without AJ Styles on there, not defending the Intercontinental title in a row. But I'm actually looking forward to the Swamp match, Jimmy. The Swamp fight, rather. I mean, we didn't know what we were going to get from the Firefly Funhouse, the Boneyard match, Money in the Bank. They've done a good job with the production, so I'm very excited to see how this one pans out. Maybe they actually do go to a swamp down the street in Florida. Maybe they do it inside. I don't know. We don't know what we're going to get, but it's very intriguing to see how they've done their production work and how this one pans out. So bring on Extreme Rules. Let's go.
There's only two things from the All Elite Wrestling world that I want to touch on. John Moxley is the AEW champion, and he's scheduled to defend the title against the new FTW champion, Brian Cage. Renee Young and John Moxley both reportedly tested negative for coronavirus. Renee Young had tested positive. Moxley has been repeatedly tested negative, but because of the situation, he wanted to stay home and protect everybody, which, credit to them. So Taz, who is Cage's manager, his work in AEW has been top-notch, both on commentary and as the manager for Brian Cage. Taz brought back his FTW championship. And if you don't remember Extreme Championship Wrestling and how the FTW belt was introduced, Taz was chasing the then ECW champion, Shane Douglas, as the world TV champion. Taz loses the TV title to Bam Bam Bigelow, who was the original roadblock as a member of the Triple Threat to Shane Douglas. Douglas was hurt and he was injured at the hands of Taz at WrestlePalooza 98 that year. So the logic for him making the FTW title made sense.
I am the world heavyweight champion, and this is the proof. You could call it the Brooklyn World Belt. You could call it the World Belt. You could call it anything you want. But enough with the chitter chatter. Shane Douglas. Shane Douglas. You piece of. Why don't you come out here, belt for belt, Brooklyn versus Pittsburgh, and bring it out. In my hands, Tony, is something that I created decades ago. What's in my hands is something that basically is my full body of work. What's in my hands was created with my blood, my sweat, my tears. What's in my hands is the FTW World Championship. So, this is a championship that no promotion has ever recognized, but wrestling fans worldwide, Tony, wrestling fans worldwide, they recognize the respect for the man who holds this championship, because the man who holds this championship is the baddest son of a bitch in wrestling. And that man is no longer uncrowned, and that man is not gonna go into Fight for the Fallen without a championship, because that man is the machine, Brian Cage. Brian Cage, you are no longer uncrowned, my man. You are the FTW champion.
This is Taz just handing Cage a belt. And why? Because Moxley's wife got COVID-19. I mean, let's see where it goes. But this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to see AEW do some sort of trash finish to their title fight, because AEW has been great about having winners and losers and limited countouts and disqualifications and things like that. But the Taz story as to why the FTW belt was originally brought in was excellent. And like, I'm an ECW apologist.
Mm-hmm.
But Taz just handing Cage the belt and going on Twitter and being like, FTW is a mindset. So it's just a prop then.
Yep.
So I can't believe in what I had been, because that FTW title had like meaning to me because I believed in Taz.
Right.
So that's, I like the idea of the FTW belt being back because I like the concept of it, but I hate Taz just handing it to him because Steve Austin was handed the $1 million championship.
I was just about to say that same thing, same exact thing.
And so the backstory of Ted DiBiase having the $1 million championship is he couldn't win the title.
Right.
At the time, he couldn't buy the title, so he created his own.
Yep.
So it made logical sense. And then he just gives it to Steve Austin.
Right. Right. And yeah, what's the point of this? And again, you know, you talk about that with Taz just handing the title right to him. The parallels here, because he couldn't beat Shane Douglas. He refused to fight Taz. The parallel here is that John Moxley refusing to show up to keep everyone safe on that. So, yes, $1 million belt situation. And also, too, Jimmy, yeah, I wasn't too big on this. This didn't really give me the big impact that I thought we were going to get after Tony Khan said it would pretty much send shockwaves to everyone. This did nothing for me. I don't care about this championship belt that Taz brings out for Cage. He never won it. He never earned it. And whoop-de-doo, it's a prop. It means nothing. Congratulations. Hold it up there. Maybe try to sell some merchandise with it because you have the rights to it. Great. God love you, but I don't care about this championship, the FTW championship on Brian Cage for that matter. Goodbye.
Yeah, I was disappointed. But
does nothing.
I mean, because here's the two scenarios, right? Well, there's a million different ways to finish a wrestling match. So Cage gets beat by Moxley. The belt means nothing.
Yep.
Cage wins. And he's got two belts, but one of them kind of means something and the other actually does mean something.
Right.
You do a disputed finish, and then you've got two titles that kind of don't mean anything because you have a disputed finish.
Right.
Or you do a count out or a disqualification or whatever. So
yep.
It just doesn't, not the time for it.
No.
If there's a disputed finish, then after the fact, you bring out the FTW belt.
Yeah,
and then maybe you run parallel programs.
Right. This is way too quick to do something like this. Way too quick. It does nothing for me. And it's too bad for people like you who are big ECW fans back in the day where that FTW championship had more meaning as a fan. It's like, all right, now you just kind of threw away a little bit of a legacy on it or some significance to it. It means nothing now. So, done.
The other AEW note that I want to mention is Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy.
Great match.
Which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But again, negative AEW match shot. And it's not at Cody, actually, ironically enough. No shots at Cody yet. But Orange Cassidy needs a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the match of his life with Jericho. And Jericho's a great performer, Hall of Fame performer. Like, there's nothing that he doesn't touch of late that doesn't turn to gold. But Orange Cassidy, super over, super athletic, can do a lot of things, different character. Him being in a main event spot with Chris Jericho is good stuff.
Yep.
It's really good stuff. It's a match that you hopefully have watched and hopefully enjoyed. A lot of people don't get the Orange Cassidy character, but I think over the last probably 6-8 months, you've got a better understanding of what that character is and what type of potential it can have, and whether it's a world championship talent or not is a point to dispute. I don't think it will be, but there could be an instance where it's a quick world title just to say that he's a former world champion.
And probably right there for Orange Cassidy in that match, the biggest match of his career right there with Chris Jericho. Sure, if he had won, that would have been incredible. But yes, a crowd would have been so much better right there. I mean, going in for the Superman punch at the end, Jericho got the Judas effect. But Cassidy, though, he is a talented guy. And, you know, anytime you're able to work in the ring with a Hall of Famer like Chris Jericho like that, that's incredible. That's really amazing. And to be put over in that scenario, you're not going to have many other opportunities like that. So good job, Orange Cassidy, taking the most of the advantage that was handed to him there with Chris Jericho. If he had won, I think it would have been good, but I think they made the right move with Jericho winning here against Orange Cassidy. You know, the win losses too, Jimmy, in the AEW, they've talked about that, the records and so forth. Hasn't really done much so far yet. I don't know the standings. They got to try to, I don't know, make more of an impact with that, if you know what I mean. Tell us more about it, like what we're going to get here for the standings. I just haven't really seen much on it. It's not really selling too much to me as a fan on that.
So it's more on their social media, but Jim Ross mentioned that, and I didn't know this because I wasn't really paying attention to it.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega has 25 wins mm-hmm. in AEW, and that's the most in the company.
Wow.
Wow is exactly right, Mike, because I wouldn't have thought about it because he's just been kind of there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think I'm just looking for Kenny Omega to be the world champion.
Yep.
Or to be challenging for the world championship, or to be in, like, he's the tag team champion and he's having great matches, but there's something missing and I can't figure out what it is that is missing, but I look forward to seeing Kenny Omega perform because I think he's tremendous. And him being in a tag team isn't what I'm looking for.
Right.
But then it's like, well, maybe they're saving his pitch count where they can do the Stadium Stampede match and feature him as winning with that one winged angel off the entryway through the setup off the staging above the entryway at the Jacksonville Jaguars Stadium.
Right.
And that's what they're going to do. Or it's him losing to Jon Moxley, missing a Phoenix splash
something.
And getting DDT'd onto barbed wire, wooden spikes, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting fined $10,000 from the Baltimore Athletic Commission.
Yeah. Well, he likes.
But when JR said 25 wins, I'm like, really?
Yeah. I can't even count 10 off the top of my head.
I mean, if I thought about it, I could. But
Yeah.
The point is that they're not. He's a tag team champion, but he's not like the world champion, or
he's not where he should be,
in my opinion. Maybe he is where he should be because he's still doing his thing, and maybe it's one of those things where he doesn't want it. He's the vice president, whatever.
Yeah, kind of like.
But I just think of Kenny Omega, like main event guy, that New Japan,
right,
where he's having these great matches with Okada, and you know he had a bad match with Cody Rhodes at a Ring of Honor show that we were at, but you know,
that's right.
There's your shot at Cody. There you go.
There you go. New Orleans. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I like that. The weekly.
So before we get to the Riley round and the match of the week, just quickly one thing. Eddie Edwards, local guy,
is
challenging for the Impact World Championship on Saturday night. It's a 4-way match that was a 6-way, that was a 5-way. There's a lot of stuff going on in Impact. They fired Tessa Blanchard, or her contract was up, depending on who you talk to or listen to or whatever. But the interesting part of the 4-way match is there's a mystery opponent, which I love.
Yep.
And they're banking on one of the WWE guys to be that mystery opponent, because we're in that window now as we record this on, I almost said August, July 12th, of who's going where.
Yep.
So I thought of Rusev. Rusev has been relatively quiet.
Yep.
Although today he announced he has COVID-19, mm-hmm. Which is why Lana's been off TV. Lana's parents have COVID-19 as well. So hopefully they recover from that. So Rusev came to mind as somebody who could have been that mystery guy, but he's out.
Yep.
Mike Bennett comes to mind. He's somebody who worked Impact for a while. The rumors are that Gallows and Anderson are going to debut on the show, Slammiversary.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't put it past me if Luke Gallows or Carl Anderson won that match, or they showed up in a different form.
Mm-hmm.
Bully Ray, who was the Impact TNA champion for a long time, most notably during his run, was called an average athlete by some idiot radio producer.
That's a story for another. So
his contract expired very quietly with Ring of Honor back in April. You have a name that I didn't think of.
I told you this before the start of the show, EC3, because he's been heavily teased with Impact. And, you know, he also did say on his Facebook Live, made a comment, I don't know if you saw this or not, that he will be fighting on July 18th. Didn't say how, didn't say who, didn't say, you know, which match or whatnot, but he said he would be fighting on July 18th. So a strong indication there about that. I think EC3 would be the guy. Just a couple of other ones to throw out there, too. Shane Helms, Curt Hawkins as well. I saw the Mike Kanellis thing. I was like, okay, that would make sense. Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson, too. Bully Ray, that one came right to me. But when I saw EC3 and that comment, I'm like, there you go. It's got to be it. Because Impact, we know that they've been teasing him big time. And that would be good. Good for Eddie Edwards to have that opportunity right there with EC3. Two talented guys. My money's on Eddie Edwards, though, Jimmy.
I want him to win the world title again so badly. I'm a big fan of Eddie Edwards.
Good man. He deserves it.
You got a Riley round for us?
Yeah, you ready?
I wouldn't have asked if I wasn't.
So the United States Championship, a new design on the United States Championship. What do you think? Do you like it? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
I like it. I'm a thumbs in the middle, but if you're, you know, your scale is 0 to 10, I'd give it a 5.5.
Five and a half.
I like it, but I just barely like it. Right.
Mm.
It's funny because there was a Photoshop done a kid on. So WWE has had this belt for like months, just sitting, waiting to debut it.
Yep.
That's why it's a finished product as opposed to Cody's TNT title, which is an unfinished product, apparently.
Oh, thanks. Gross.
So they had this, and what happened was the next day there was a kid who did Photoshop who put what he would have done with it on Reddit.
Yep.
And it looks 10 times better. He moved the championship thing down a little bit. He put the eagle centered. He put the blue in the background up top where the stars are. Just made it look 10 times better.
Nice.
But I like this design. I like this better than the previous design. I like it better than the John Cena U.S. title spinner belt, which I should have said weeks ago was the most hideous championship of all time. My apologies to those who I offended when I besmirched the European championship. Because that John Cena U.S. Championship spinner belt is the worst of all time. But I like this design. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I was with you at first, like, oh, boy. But then it kind of grew on me a little bit more. I did love the red, white, and blue one they had for 14 years. You know, the one that was most recent before this one. I also have it on display on my wall, that U.S. title, the one that was just recently retired. But I gave it, if you're going on a scale of 1 to 10, I gave it a solid 8. I really liked it. It kind of brought me back. It felt like a mix of an NWA title in a way, like it would be an NWA promotion and maybe a little bit of WCW. And I'm like, that's good. Good job, WWE. They're turning the clock back a little bit. They made it that oval shape. It's not the super big one because, you know, it's United States champion. And I respect that. I think that's good. It's a mid-tier championship, and I think that's what they're trying to tell us here. So I overall like the design. Not bad at all. It might be in my collection soon. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, I have a question I want to ask you about your collection off air.
Oh, sure. Sounds good.
I might be making you an offer on something that you have or a trade or something.
Oh, all right. We'll talk about this. All right. Make me an offer. I can't refuse. All right. So, Jimmy, if you're being sent to a deserted island, you can only watch 3 wrestling matches over and over on DVD. Name them.
Gargano and Cole from Takeover Brooklyn. Steamboat and Savage from WrestleMania 3, and Bret Hart and Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13.
Yeah, you and I got the 2 out of the 3. Austin, Bret for me, Mania 13, Macho Man, Steamboat, Mania 3, and I went Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Mania 25. So right there on that. And this will be a prelude into my match of the week, but let me go into this for the final question. What's your favorite member of all time in the NWO, New World Order?
It has to be Hogan.
Is it Hogan? Okay.
Yeah, it has to be Hogan, because Hogan, what's lost on Hogan and why Hogan is like the number one performer of all time in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Hogan drew big dollars on both the good guy side of things and on the bad guy side of things.
Right.
Like big dollars.
Yeah.
So like that can't be discredited. So as far as like the number one member of the New World Order, the NWO, or as Hogan called it, the New World Organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be Hogan.
Hogan. Okay. So I went with, Hogan is a great choice. I actually went with Scott Hall, because when you go back to that, he was the initial guy. He was the one that showed up on Nitro. He then introduced Nash. And then of course, the third man of Hogan. But I loved Razor Ramon when he was in the WWF. Big follower of his when he went to the WCW for the NWO. Very intrigued by that. He was my favorite, and he was the, you know, one of the cornerstones right there for the NWO and how powerful they were. So there you go. NWO, it was officially formed 24 years ago this past week. There you go. Bash at the Beach, 1996. You know what I'm talking about, the hostile takeover, the buildup as to who would be that third man there, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. And we didn't know who the third man was. They fought Sting, the Macho Man, and Lex Luger. Match was decent, nothing special. Luger actually got hurt during the match. He was wheeled out. Sting and Macho Man, you know, they fought back and so forth. But Nash actually had a low blow on the Macho Man to put him down at one point, and that was pretty much the real turning point there, when that brought Hulk Hogan out to, you know, maybe save the day there, because it didn't look good for Macho Man and Sting. But we know everything about this one here. When Hulk Hogan was the third man, came out, just the build up on it, and the way it was sold so well with Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Dusty Rhodes, you know, Hogan comes out and Heenan said, "What side is he on?" Hogan gave Macho Man the leg drop, and Heenan said right away, "He's the third man Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW," and just debris and trash filled the ring. Bobby Heenan was fantastic. He has slept with the devil. Just so many great lines there.
Tony Schiavone had the best line of them all.
Hulk Hogan is in the building.
You're damn right he is.
Go get him, Hulk, sir.
Yeah, but whose side is he on?
Go, what are you talking about?
Whose side is he on?
What are you talking about?
Yes, yeah, sir.
Get him, Hogan. Go get him, baby.
Come on and get some of this now.
Who's bad now, boys?
Hulk Hogan arrived. Hulk.
What is he doing?
Oh, my God.
Is he the third man?
He's the third man.
What the hell is going on here?
Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW. He is the third man.
Look at all of this crap in this ring. This is what's in the future for you if you want to hang around the likes of this man Hall or this man Nash.
As far as I'm concerned, all this crap in the ring represents these fans out here.
All right, we have seen the end of Hulkamania. For Bobby the Brain Heenan, for Dusty Rhodes, Gene Okerlund, I don't know. I'm Tony Schiavone. Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. We're out of here. Straight to hell.
You can go straight to hell, Hulk Hogan. Exactly. This whole thing, though, this was the most important, I wouldn't say match, but moment in professional wrestling history. That's what I would say right there. Most important.
Who did you think was going to be the third guy? Do you remember?
No.
I guess you should back up because you're mostly a WWF guy. Were you watching WCW at the time?
Not too much. But with Hulk coming in, though, because here's the thing, Jimmy. I didn't know about this with Hulk Hogan turning heel until the night after. I didn't watch Bat. I watched Nitro the night after, and Schiavone's like, "You won't believe what happened last night. Hulk Hogan shocked the world." And I'm like, "What the hell happened?" So they had me right there before social media and so forth, everything along those lines. So it was really interesting stuff right there. But I don't remember, though. No, who did you have?
I don't remember who I had, but I know I didn't have Hulk Hogan until he came out.
Okay.
And when he came out, when he came out, I kind of was like, "Oh, okay." But, and I wish I could remember whether I was pissed or whether I was like, "Well, this makes sense."
Yeah, because
Hogan had been off TV for a while.
Right.
If you listen to 83 Weeks, it was originally Sting. Bischoff wanted Hogan. Hogan didn't want to do it. Then it was going to be Sting, and then Hogan called Bischoff and was like, "Who's the third man going to be?"
Yeah,
and that's when Bischoff knew he had Hogan to be the third guy.
And to all the listeners out here, go into the archives of the podcast here 2 years ago, the interview we had with Kevin Sullivan, and he talked about how Hulk Hogan was at his house, and then he drove him right over there to the Daytona Arena moments before he turned heel. And Sullivan said he had a big part in that decision, too. So check it out, 2 years ago, May of 2018. So there you go. That was 24 years ago this week, Jimmy, the NWO. There you go. Yep.
So my match of the week is also a WCW match. It's from the Clash of Champions 15. It's June 21st, 1991. It's Rick and Scott Steiner defending the IWGP World Tag Team Championship against Hiroshi Hase and Masahiro Chono. It's just one of my favorite tag team matches of all time. It's a good wrestling match. It's hard hitting. The Steiners were awesome.
Yep.
And this was one of the first times that I was exposed to international wrestling. And I was a fan. I was a huge fan of the Steiner brothers. I was all in on them. Like, innovative moves, hard hitting, the background, the athletic backgrounds, all that stuff. So that's my match of the week.
Nice. Love the Steiner brothers. Love them. 1991, Clash of Champions, huh?
Yeah, Clash 15.
Clash 15.
June 12th, 1991. There's also on that Clash a superb match, 2 out of 3 falls with Ric Flair and beautiful Bobby Eaton.
Oh!
It was from Huntsville, Alabama.
I love those Clash of the Champions were good.
They were nice little shows.
Yeah, underappreciated. Yeah. So I'll check that out. Good one, Jimmy. Thank you.
Absolutely. Just to kind of wrap up, thanks to everybody who took the 2 hours to listen to our Undertaker podcast last week. We got a lot of great feedback on the episode, and it started moving my mind. And like, hopefully in August, we get to do a Vince McMahon episode. His birthday is in August. I want to do it.
Yep.
And I think I want to focus on his villain character side.
Ooh.
Which many people might not know, actually started on Memphis TV. Memphis TV. We'll let that simmer a little bit. But his Vince McMahon, the villain, began on Memphis TV.
Oh, okay. Oh, so
if we get the chance in August, we'll do a Vince McMahon episode.
Can't wait. Let's do it.
Next week, we'll be doing a horror show at Extreme Rules recap show. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985. My Twitter account is at IamJamesStewart. Our show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can email the show, WrestleCast985@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.